Welcome to this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, August 12, 2014, and it is 6:31 p.m. Would you please take a moment and review the minutes from our last meeting on June 23rd and let you know if they meet with your approval?
Since I wasn't here, I'm going to abstain from the lovely conversation you guys had, but I'm going to remove myself from the approval in this minute. I know we're not really approving.
I'm good with it, Bob.
Well, Bob, I went through the minutes too. I can stall so it's time to read them. But
I read them. But okay. I was somewhere. I wasn't here. Could have been non-verbal.
Oh, that's true. All right. Well, I'm good with them then too.
Okay. So then we will move on to the second order of business this evening. And this is one of your favorites: annual review of the financial condition of district qualified financial institutions. We currently do business with four financial institutions. PMA is our primary investor, if you will. We do a little bit of business with U.S. Bank, Wheaton Bank and Trust, and then we hold the majority of our accounts, checking accounts with MB Financial. I have reviewed the audited financial statements for each one of those institutions and verified their registration, and they fall within the guidelines as approved by Board Policy 4.30. Are there any questions?
Just a quick question with those. The insurance is up to the maximum, and then do they do matching funds for the anything in excess of that?
Yes, there's I thought that was the case. There's a term associated with that, and it doesn't come to my mind right now, but yes, they do have that appropriate protection in place.
Gotcha. I thought that was the case. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay. The next order of business, this is a new one to the Finance Committee, but it's to be done on an annual basis. Post-issuance of compliance for Illinois governmental use of bonds. And just to give you a little background, some of the leases that we hold are purchased as bonds by vendors, by individuals, by whomever, and because they're associated with local governmental agencies, they are granted a particular type of tax status. In other words, they're government tax-free bonds. Also, as you all recall, when we went out to secure financing for the building additions with MB maintained those bonds in-house, and it's, at least that I know, it's their intention to hold those bonds. So according to the policy, as we develop this whole process, I am required to tell you that I have reviewed each of the particular leases, that nothing has substantially changed from year to year, and the rest is demonstrated in the report here. In particular, schedules I, J, O, the smart board leases, well, that would be, I guess that's O, and then the schedule P, schedule S, and then again the loan with MB Financial. I reviewed all of those documents, and again, nothing has changed substantially to give any indication that we're not in compliance. But this is something that needs to be presented to the Finance Committee and to the board later this evening on an annual basis, and then the board secretary will be signing a document that says that we were in compliance with that.
Bob, is this a school code?
No, this is actually, this came from our legal counsel, from Chapman and Cutler, who did all our negotiations and representing in the MB loans. And does these, when I cite these schedules, those are capital leases. In other words, we lease the assets to purchase them. Not like an operating lease where we lease it and we turn it back after 3, 4, or 5 years. These we lease to own.
Okay.
So as I said, this is part of the board policy agreement that we put in place when we did the financing with MB, and this was my annual review and report to the board.
And I'm sure the auditors would appreciate this as well. So.
Well, they review basically all the reports, so I'm sure they may be looking for it one of these days. And the biggest thing they've made me aware of is the IRS could come knocking at your door one day. And if you don't have these documents in place and you don't have signed policy statements stating that it was presented to the board, they could take away your TRS tax preference obligation.
Bob, what's the on these banks that we have? What's the and I know I, you know MBE I know is tier one, Kansas U.S. Bank Corp tier one bank, but these smaller I don't want to call them smaller banks, but what's the risk these things go uncapitalized? They get taken over by the Fed. We just the leases just become part of the agreements?
I would say so, because we owe them the money. It's not like they owe anything to us. We already have the assets right. on site, and we make our yearly, these are annual lease payments that we make. So I would say there's little to no exposure on our.
Okay. I mean, whatever the entity is, if it's.
It's going to get bought up.
Well, right, and then it's you know, contractually obligated. So.
Yeah, and again, we owe them the money. It's not like.
Right.
They won't be paying.
You just hope they buy it at a discount.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, then that's it for my presentations this evening. We have Dave Scarmato, our Director of Buildings and Grounds. Dave has brought forth his maintenance inspections and capital planning. And this is your first opportunity to meet Dave. He hasn't asked any questions, so...
There is a day. There is a day. We're bringing him out from his office downstairs.
But tonight I'd like to go over our maintenance inspection review and capital asset and plan and just kind of give you some history and some kind of where we're at and what we're doing. Our mission statement is the mission of the B&G department of D41 to support exceptional learning by providing a safe, clean, and healthy environment. Past inspections that we have done here prior to 2012, the staff has looked at our HVAC system and chillers and condensing units around the buildings and grounds and pavement things. Documentation, however, was just kind of done sporadically, maybe in like spiral notebooks, and there were like no real official forms, maybe a couple here and there for things. So, looking back on things, stuff was getting inspected. And there's a whole stack of stuff, you know, out in the maintenance garage, but it was kind of left there and not really orderly or organized in anything. So since 2012, we created an inspection matrix. And with this matrix, we pretty much have everything from our boilers on there down to the generator here at CSO. And included on there is who inspects it, if it's annual, semi-annually, quarterly, monthly, bi-weekly. And some of the things that we do have on here are done by outside contractors, and that's for our life safety codes that we have. So a lot of those assets, like our boilers and fire extinguishers and portables, are done by somebody else. But that doesn't mean that our staff doesn't look at those things, pretty regularly. Next, we have our newly implemented maintenance and inspection forms. Since 2012, I kind of looked at all the things that we do inspections on and tried to create some forms for them so that they're basic forms, they're easy to navigate by staff, and just kind of go through all those assets that were on the matrix there. So our UniFence sound forms, and we do roofing exhaust fans. There's a daily boiler inspection form during the season. The custodians will go down there and they check all the gauges. They blow it down to get rid of all the sediment in the boilers. And then every weekend, staff will come in and they go to all the buildings. They check in the wintertime. They'll check all the heating systems, walk around the building, make sure there's no vandalism, broken doors, that sort of thing. This year, too, one of the big things that we did was we created a summer classroom cleaning schedule. It seemed like each building was kind of doing different things. So if we formalized it so that at every school, you know, we go from the top of the room, from the lights to the ceiling, the walls, all the way down to floors, toilets, floor, and, you know, just kind of do a thorough cleaning. And everyone checks off on that so that we can go back and review to see what was done and what wasn't done. And it's a good tool for the staff. They really like it because, you know, after you're on your, like, 50th classroom, you kind of are like, we really have to do this again and over, you know, so... It was a good thing. Our playgrounds too. Being my history with the park district, you know, we were big into playground safety, and we have forms. So and I created forms for our low-frequency inspections and high-frequency, where we actually go out there and hands-on rake in the chips and actually check chains and slides and, you know, that sort of thing, make sure they're safe for the kids. Outside contractor property maintenance, I just thought I'd throw this in. I'm sure everybody knows the Park District mows all of the big open space in the fields, which now we're kind of cutting down with some of these additions, so we may need to look at that again with them. But then anything that the Park District does not do, that would be an outside mowing contractor. They come in and they pretty much do all the fronts of the buildings and all the trim work, and that the Park District strictly does just the big field areas. And one of the things that we have been working on since 2012 is to recapture our property lines. At several of the schools, we had a lot of overgrowth kind of meandering in and taking over, you know, a lot of space. And I've got a picture in here of Hadley that you can see. It's been a long time.
I heard you made a new friend.
Yeah, we have one friend and one, well, they were okay with it after the fact. But the other issue we have are sump pump drains over at Ben Franklin. Almost every home pretty much has a drain like that going into our property. So I've had some conversation with the village. And well, it's up to them to go. They have to take it back 10 feet from the property line, so it has to be on their property. So that has not happened yet, so I need to...
So something like that in our property is not legal or by code?
No, they need to... It has to stop 10 feet before the property line, so it has a chance to soak in somewhat in their property before it gets into ours.
And so they do have the right to convey their water onto our property as long as it's a 10 feet.
10 feet down, yeah.
So we have the right to convey our water onto their property?
Actually, I think we
Well, we kind of, like, every property with the stormwater retention systems mm-hmm. that we have, you know, we have to be able, I believe the codes, we have to take on 1.5 times what our site requires so that we take on our neighbors, and then it kind of follows on down the road with other developments.
But the houses don't, because they're under 1 acre lots.
Right, so that's something different.
So Dave, is this a Ben Franklin epidemic? Do we have one or two pumps, or we have...
In the back corner, there's several of them, and I think there's one over by Lincoln as well. So
this is going to be a pain point that's going to roll up because people are going to get upset because they have to move their stuff up. That's been there for 20 years.
Yeah, I think some of them are some new construction. They may have been teardowns, and then they built the bigger home, and, you know, it was just easier to connect to their gutters and everything. Some pump, and it goes right to the property line.
So how are we addressing this as a...
Well, I contacted the village, their inspectors, they're supposedly going out to the sites, and then they'll actually take action with the homeowner, send them a letter and notify them that this work needs to be done. So I'm just not sure. I need to double check with them now and see if that's been done. Or I haven't heard anything from the residents yet, so I don't know if they haven't been.
Yeah. You are spot on.
You know, some of that's true but not true, because you can't convey your water onto somebody's property. You know, if you're doing it, you know it's wrong. It's a violation. You should just stop. I mean, most people don't want to say, open up a can of worms. Because what damage have they done? I mean, that's...
Well, especially at Ben Franklin, where they were dumping in the back, it's the southwest corner, right behind that backstop. The backstop is elevated, and there's kind of like a swale that went from the back corner to the front. That got so out of whack. I think the Park District tried going through there and mowing it when it was wet and made some ruts, and the water kind of got bottled up. So last year we regraded it, reseeded it, got the water flowing so it doesn't collect in the back corner.
And that's a good example of why we have to do these inspections.
So
and people, they're liable for that, quite frankly.
Oh, absolutely.
If you want to open up the whole thing, don't charge them for what you just did.
I mean, because
they're in violation. That's why they won't argue, Patrick.
A couple of years ago, Dave and I got a call from an angry resident that said we were allowing this area of our property of Franklin to flood. And we went out and met with the property owner, and we pointed to their sump pump and said, there's a contributing factor. You and your neighbors in this whole area here are dumping your excess water on our property. And they kind of went away.
Because there's liability.
That's when Dave contacted the village and asked them to start helping us resolve this issue.
Okay, so... And I want to jump towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
The end is we're going to get 7 residents to dig up their sump pumps and go 10 feet inside their property line.
That's my goal anyway. So I just
I don't think they actually have to dig into sump pumps. They just have to take the discharge.
The discharge pipe.
And that's you know what they can they don't have to dig it up, right, Jack? They cut it off. Yeah. They put a new extra. So they really aren't digging up their yard. They're just stopping it where they are.
Okay.
Putting a. They have these caps.
Yep.
You know, it just comes up, and then it flows off in that 10 feet shy of the property line. Then it's conveyed. So they're not thinking. If they do, you know what? A contractor may dig up their yard so he can make some money, but the proper way to do it is not.
Okay.
That.
All right. I just want to.
So when the yard's
a good question.
I just want to be. I mean, let's do what we need to do. It's our property. Let's move in the direction mm-hmm. that gets to resolve. But as good neighbors.
The only
and. The communication transparency that we always try to do. Let's start with soft touch and then.
And this is important though. There's, once again, to me, it's a lesson to learn. I mean, this accumulated over time. These inspections need to be better because we can't get to the point where we're then having the problem where there's a swale issue and all that. When there's new construction. Around our properties. We should be reviewing what's going on during that time. That's the critical time when these things are happening. So if there's new construction around Franklin or Lincoln or wherever, we go, we check it out. People are checking out our construction to make sure we're not doing something to their property. We got to flip it so when that sump pump's being installed, we can tell the inspector, hey, you know what? We noticed this is in violation. So we don't want the same problem again to solve. So what I'm asking as a board member, and Bob knows this, more proactive. Because we're now reacting, and this, what I've heard is this has happened, and now we're finding it because the maintenance people, you know, had an issue when they flew through this. So I hope these inspections that you're detailing in here are looked at with a more critical eye. And my idea is for new construction, you're out there. Because you know that what you just stated, it's true, which I'm guessing it is, bam. That's where a problem is existing. So let's make sure whenever we have new construction, we're checking that out to make sure it's not impacting our property.
When do you want this resolved by, Dave?
Well, I'm hoping that you know by the end of this fall before wintertime that we can get some resolution. So I'll make another call to the village. And,
yeah,
and check and see where they're at with it. So
just keep an updated Bob and the finance because I just don't want this thing to blow up and.
Agreed.
Even though we're in the right, even though we won't have to do anything, hopefully.
I'm willing to have those people come in here and explain, and then he can Dave and Bob can explain how much money we spent of the taxpayers' money to go ahead and fix that swale. Even if it was $10 or you know, $1,000, we're doing it for reasons that you know we didn't cause these people with their sub pumps. And that's a lot of, you know. They want to open up that can of worms.
And all this kind of came to light as a result of the inspections.
Yeah. Well, when I started in 2012, that's when I know the properties, you know, so I knew where there were some white areas and stuff, but it was really started by the resident that called in because there was tall weeds in there. And well, I actually called the park district and our mower out there, our contractor, to see, okay, you guys are supposed to be going here and they're supposed to be going there. So there was a little communication brought between the park district and the landscape contractor who was actually responsible for mowing that back section. You know, the park district was saying it was too small, they couldn't get the big mower in there, and our contractor was like, no, it's park district. So the weeds got a little bit out of hand, but we took care of it right away in 2012.
So that's one of my questions when I wrap this, and I know we're interrupting the presentation here, but as long as it's right on track. What do you have a mow schedule and a mow area diagram from the park district?
Yeah, that's
I was out on Hadley and their mow schedule mustn't be too good because Hadley's weeds their grass was up to my I'm not the tallest guy but it wasn't to my knee but you know, it was too high so and we had go on.
Yeah, the park district has those maps that are at the bottom there so they know the open space where they're supposed to be mowing.
So the dots, I couldn't see that on my printout. So the dots are where they mow?
Those are all the landscape trees at Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
So
the green areas?
All the green area, correct. And the mowing contractor does in front of the school and
the sides.
All in the sides of the property.
Well, that looks like they're doing almost everything.
Well, and I think over time what's happened, though, the trees are getting so big that these maps were a couple years old now, but the park district can't get in between all those trees with the big motor.
I guess that's my point.
But
my point is where, if this is great if this is 3 years old or 30 years old, but the point is every season they should be pre-season. You go out there, we should be meeting them. What is your mow area? What is your mow schedule? I mean, you should know that every pre-season. I know the IGA, I don't like the IGA, as Bob knows. And to me, it's so open-ended. And I hear these problems, you know, that we're not mowing this, you're not mowing this. For, you know, if you own commercial property, you're going out and having a mow schedule at the beginning of the landscaping season. And you know exactly where these guys, they have to mow these. It's per the IGA. We should know exactly when they're doing it and what they're doing each pre-season. That's what I'd like in this. That's what I highlighted about our, you know, I've heard these two examples of our grounds where there's responsibility of somebody else to mow. And, you know, if that's not happening, that's what I would propose to happen. And if they miss a mow because of rain or whatever, an email to you. We didn't mow on Saturday, we're mowing on Monday.
Well, during the year, the park district, they're responsible to mow once a week, and during the summertime, I'm not sure what day they come because they kind of fit in with our other parks. During the school year, when I was at the park district, we had a lot of issues. The principals wouldn't let us mow. They wanted us to mow before 7 a.m. or after 3:30, which is kind of impossible. So we were trying to do one school each morning, and then, you know, on the weekends, go back on and do stuff. Now, the issue they had this year is, I noticed was there's a lot of areas that are wet in our detention areas, and they did get some new mowers this year because they downsized them. I think they contracted out a lot of the mowing as well, so they don't have as many people doing it. But some of the areas were not done, and I did have conversation with the park district about, you know, they were missing things, or, well, we have special events that email and say, hey, we're having a picnic here, or, you know, at end of school year, they do that Olympics every week. So, you know, we ask for extra mowers. So I do have contact with them. Now, I think a lot of times we're at the bottom, you know, of their list. So
right, yeah, and therein lies the issue. I mean, I think we have to be the proactive one that says, okay, we're meeting out April 1st, beginning of mow season. We're going over the mow area. Here's my diagram. This is my expectation per the IGA. We want you out here once a week mowing this area. On which day I need to know, because I have to coordinate that with my staff. We're going to inspect after a mow. I mean, I was out there on Hadley on the day of our tour, for our listening tour, which was Monday.
Mm-hmm.
If that was a week's worth of growth, it's the fastest growing Hadley's got. You know, we got to go figure out who planted that and how good they're at with grass, because it was up to here. Kids were playing football in it. Now, because the coaches complained, on Wednesday it was mowed for the next clinic. To me, I think I listen to this guy, you know, how we're monitoring it, and I'm like, boom, there's an example. When were they supposed to mow? The reason they mowed was because a park district group, most likely, said, hey, we're out here playing football, and my little guys are, you know, I can't see them. They're getting stuck. So I think that's got to be stepped up. And I know it's. So I would ask for us to do that. Because our grounds are very important, as you've explained the example at Ben Franklin.
Here's some of the life safety annual inspections that we're required to do. Our boilers, fire alarm systems, sprinklers, bleachers, RPZ, backflow, portable classrooms, elevators, and partition walls. Each year, the boilers are taken apart, cleaned, and serviced. And they get put back together and then they're operating for the year. The portable classrooms, FGM comes in and inspects them. They have it done by an architect once a year. Any issues that they find with that, we rectify, have to fill out a report and submit it to the ROE, and then we get our occupancy permits for that. Here's a couple of projects that we're working on over at Hadley. There's some before and after pictures. This is the east property line, and you can see all the undergrowth that's occurred. Our property line, actually, if you look at it, it's hard to see, but this tree line goes all the way from the south end of the property all the way to the north. So all that undergrowth, the buckthorn, was all cleaned out. Got an email from a resident that is very happy. It hadn't been done in 40 years, they said, so they were...
Four?
40.
40 years.
And that was done after our listening tour, correct?
Within the last... I'm not sure when you did that. Within the last week and a half or so.
Absolutely. Yeah. What?
This other issue is at Hadley as well. The main entrance actually comes up here, but when the kids come out from TE, they're constantly cutting across that corner, and it's just a mud pit there all the time, so... and then they end up dragging all that back on the trees and everything. So, here's a couple of the inspection form examples. This is what the guys use, and they check off on there if there's an issue with it, what the problem was, and then any action that was taken. If they can't take care of it, they'll notify me, and then we'll either get an outside contractor or somebody else on staff maybe that could take care of that. Our capital asset review. That in 2012, FGM conducted a district-wide safety and roofing assessment, and included in the report were basically all of our capital assets, pavement, roofing conditions, replacement costs. There was implementation schedules for the capital projects. Also, what we do is we check with the principals each year and get their input and feedback if they have any projects or things that they would like to see. And annually, we spend about $1 million towards these types of capital projects. We use that information that FGM developed, and we just created a capital master plan spreadsheet. And each one of the expenditures is it's actually broken down into each school site, and then what we do is we insert the project that's going to happen, the year that it would happen, and then the cost. And then some of those things that are rooftops and control system, boiler, chillers. I've got the sheet that goes all the way out to 2045. But on this next example, it just goes up to 2040. And you can see, this is just a brief snapshot of Abraham Lincoln. We've got a generator, chalkboards, carpeting, roofing, sound system. The project cost, and then it's broken down into the year that it will be completed.
Dave, I got a question. I like this. This is this long-term budgeting thing I really like. A couple questions I have on this spreadsheet, though. Fourth one up, 21st Century Furniture, $240,000. I thought we were done with that, Bob.
Next year we'll be finished with it. This actually started 3 years ago.
Okay, so these $60,000.
It just continues to roll out, but we're in a good position now to finish that up next year.
Mm. Okay, so these 60,000 will fall off.
They'll fall
right,
off.
As we complete projects, we'll take that off and say we put in a new rooftop unit or something. We'll just add the life expectancy on further on down and figure out the replacement cost for that.
Okay, so my question then is, I like it. Can we get the other schools on this? I'd like to take just...
They're all...
It is. I just did the one school to fit it on the slide, but I've got all the schools are on the sheet.
Oh, it is? All right.
Yeah. This is just an example.
Yeah, and Bob, you have presented to that. Have you presented that to us in the past?
Yes.
In the long range age and obsolescence plan, so...
Correct.
So it's the same numbers in that presentation?
Well, mine is an internal working document.
Okay.
And Dave just took some parts from that and included it in his presentation.
So he can share, we can share what Dave has
right.
with you guys, so you can see the bigger.
I was going to say, I didn't see that in board book. Maybe I missed it. But
oh, it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't.
Okay.
But it theoretically, it's the same document that you already
have. So we have an age and we have a capital projects plan, and then we also have an age and obsolescence plan, which is for smaller type of assets, and it even includes our band and orchestra equipment, things like that.
But I like it because it keeps me 2 to 3 years on budgets, levies, all that stuff, because it helps me from a long term perspective of where we think the money's going to come. So. If I can get a copy, I appreciate it, Dave.
Sure. Our next steps, we'd like to continue to develop additional inspection forms. As things go on, we find more and more things that we're checking and looking at. And also kind of work towards electronic inspection and preventative maintenance forms. this, and, you know, treating all these forms are great, but it creates a lot of paper, you know, from doing all the inspections. So there is some software out there called SchoolDude. There's different sections that we can purchase. There's one for the tech. There's one for maintenance. There's preventative maintenance. And the nice thing about it is we can take the form that we have created and we can actually download it into the SchoolDude, and it will generate a work order. Say it's a weekly inspection, a monthly or annual. That time of year, it'll generate its own work order and then pop it out to the guys. They see it on there, and then you just take care of the work order, close it out, sends an email to, you know, whoever it is, the person that it's going towards, and so that they know it's communicated. So, and we have something like that now, but it's kind of like a Yugo, and gets us from A to B, but it doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles on it, you know. So
a Yugo reference.
Yeah, I know. That's good.
So,
that's,
I mean, it's cool, you know, you put your work order in there, and we have to do a lot of input, you know, and then you have to manually send it. So this is kind of, and it's something that the tech department can use, and we're also talking about it today. There's a calendar section to this. You can do it. There might be something that'll help us with our facilities and usage stuff. Conclusion, the planning inspection process is continuous, allowing for coordination of capital projects to add student capacity, modernization of existing facilities to provide an equitable school system, improvements to provide for safer environments and improve technology to better plan and communicate. And finally, the process is an essential balancing act to meet students' needs with available resources and financial capabilities. It's the process that steers the district responsibilities and accomplishments for the overall benefit of our children.
Dave, I appreciate it. Joe, I recognize where we've got to improve, especially in your eyes, of ensuring that our land is well, our property is well maintained, and that we continue to have a focus on that and ensuring that our boundary lines are our boundary lines, and that we maintain it as well as possible, and that we're working with our park, any of our entities that work alongside us, that we have that taken care of and that it's done in an appropriate manner. So I appreciate your push on that, because we're here tonight because of what you've helped us become a better district, because of trying to figure out how to maintain our land a little bit more appropriately. So I appreciate that.
Can I ask one question?
On ask away.
Playground equipment. It's a bi-monthly inspection. That's what it says on the frequency.
Right.
What is that? In
minimum.
Minimum?
Yeah. They go out there and check the swings and the chains. Anywhere there's a pivot point, the chain links are checked.
Is that best practices bi-monthly? You said maybe more frequently?
My goal is to get the custodians out, you know, at least once a week on that. But it, in the past, I mean, it was maybe like once every 6 months if possible.
Yeah, I would think as frequent as possible would be appropriate given the safety of children and what can happen, you know, from one day to the next on playground equipment after school use. So I ask that we research what the best practices is for the equipment we have, and that we maintain a schedule that is appropriate for the equipment we have.
Okay.
School Dude, is technology you're looking into is part of our budget now?
Yes, that's what Dave would probably. Dave would like to bring that to a recommendation to the board in the future.
Part of our existing budget.
Yes.
Yeah. So the only other thing that we have tonight is just a quick update on fees. Patrick had mentioned it as well a while back. I just wanted to make sure. We definitely take a more aggressive approach with our fees that are overdue. We've sent letters out. We've had communication with individuals, and it has provided. It's opened up some new revenues for us. Many of the
collection
individuals,
of old revenue.
Yeah. Many individuals, their emails or whatever it was, it just wasn't getting through the right people. There were some situations where there was divorces. There's all kinds of different situations, but we've already started to see a return on that, those conversations. Nancy, Mary Lou downstairs have done a fantastic job. Because of our online enrollment and our payment schedules that we've created for our community, this time last year, let me pull that up real quick. We had collected at the end of July $58,000. This time of this year, we're at $98,000. So real pleased with their efforts to really coordinate and help parents have a more streamlined payment process that will help us. But for those individuals who may have forgotten to pay or whatever, we're going to continue to support them and let them know that there are ways that we will work with them. Just talk to us. That really is the most important thing. Please communicate with us. We'll work with you. We'll come up with a payment schedule. But these are the fees that the board has set forth, and that our role is to collect those fees. So I'm pleased with where we're at today in that area.
And I know that as a group, we continue on to talk about the
fees overall.
Fees overall.
Correct.
Structure and all that. And whenever this group decides it's appropriate, I think it's a good discussion to continue to.
I think so.
And I think that's something that we want to do early in the process so that we're not surprising anybody for the following school year. And I know Patrick has hit that point and he's kind of pinpointed September.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say.
I just want to make sure we're still on track for that.
We are. September will be a time that we start having that conversation around fees for all the reasons that you just stated that we need to know as we get into the budgeting process, yes or no on the fees. Do we count that in or not? That'll be a good conversation in September. I think we got everything else.
I have lots.
Yeah. And then we're going to start at 7:15 with
15 only.
3 arguments. I was going to go back. I had some things on my email, but I also had emailed you back in June, Bob, after I was on my vacation and missed the 23rd meeting and listening to the hour you guys spent together gave me some more questions. And one of them was on IGAs. And still, I'd really like to get some, it's a want by me, a chart of these IGAs and who's responsible for what and all that. And that, I do think this ties into the presentation tonight, and I know the idea I came up with is one you just come up with. It's a standard practice for anybody who owns property, and I'm sure Jack can give you better solutions to meet, those type of maintenance meetings and things like that you have with your contractors. And I see the people with IGAs as contractors. They're contracted to do this. They gave us something, or we gave them something, that's what they're giving us. So I still kind of want to see a detailed chart on IGAs, what each one entails, and what the approvals are, what the submittals are required for the agreement. So that is a want by me. The other thing I asked for, which keeps coming up in your budget, because when I went back to this email, is the state of Illinois funding. You got a very conservative approach to it for very good reasons. And I just would like to see a detailed breakdown of what we have received from the state in the last 3 years. What's coming into, which fund it goes into. I want to see the trend for me. That's why I asked for it. I think it's an important thing to see.
The latest budget that you have here tonight, mm-hmm. has the latest numbers available from the state of Illinois in terms of what we can expect for general state aid and categorical funding. Mm-hmm. So there's a change from when you saw the tentative budget to mm-hmm. the final budget. And that typically happens June, July, August.
In my mind, I want to see it from the last 3 years so that I can get I can see the trending analysis. There's a lot of talk about it, but for me, I'm in a vacuum looking at it. So if I can start looking at trend data, maybe it doesn't trend.
Can I just piggyback on that? Since I think this is considered an open item, so Bob, could you list that as some of Joe's items as open items for the next meeting?
They'll be for the next meeting.
Okay. So the other piece is make sure the other members of the finance committee say yes, that's what we want.
Okay.
So we're giving the direction of a committee and not an individual because it's really important for the board.
That's why I'm saying it was
I know. And I recognize the language you're using. So is that something that the committee wants to see?
My IGA charts.
As long as it's not onerous to Bob and his staff.
I
for me, the IGAs is way down on my list.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we defer the IGAs, because I'd like to talk to Joe about.
Okay.
I have IGA things as well, and maybe we can bring them together.
Okay. That'd be great.
Okay.
So maybe you do not have the IGA next time then?
No.
Okay, but we will have a 3-year breakdown
of state
Illinois funding.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be a very telling.
Perfect.
Chart.
Thank you. I think the June report tends to be a good one, and I brought this one of my items, and I printed off the monthly revenues, because if I'm right, June's the end of our fiscal year, so when I look at the year-to-date and I look at the budget and all that, I can see the variances actually have lots of meaning.
I don't want to interrupt, but that's a budget conversation. I'm interested in your other topic, so can we hold that till 7:15?
Yeah, that's fine. That's good. Okay. I'm all for you there. It's a good idea.
Joe, what you're seeing there is a cash presentation, not an accrual presentation. So, I know one of the numbers that's is the property tax revenue according to budget. But a number of years ago, we had a conversation with our auditors as well as PMA, one of our financial partners, and they wanted to see a budget cash number. So that's why the budget number that you see now is actually for the levy that occurred a year and a half ago, December of 12, which would be for the 13-14 school year. But it includes revenue or property taxes received during this May and June that will be accrued out of that number into this next year's financial reports. The guide levies are always spot on.
I'm with you. And I actually was not focused on that when I printed off the sheet, but I understand the accrual versus cash basis.
I asked the same question to Bob last week. So this is it. And it's not. It's in November.
But all the other ones are.
Yes.
And that's the ones I was actually focused on a lot of the expenses and not the revenues. My other topic was cash balances. So we got 2 minutes. I printed it off, and I know, Patrick, this was kind of one of the things you brought up when we first got on the board, and I started looking at these cash balances. And my question is kind of just, maybe it's general, but I sense that when you have these type of cash balances, I kind of want to get an understanding from your perspective where you're sitting, if I could sit there, because I know that I sit there in my job. So I look at it and I say, what am I, and people ask me this question. Okay, you look at this, well, what have you done in the last 3 months? What have you analyzed to make it? What presentations have banks given you that said, hey, I can look at this and I want to try and help you out to maximize revenues? And to me, what I'd like to get a report from you that says, hey, this is what has been presented to me. This is my analysis of it. This is why we're moving forward with this. Because this just doesn't happen by itself. There's a lot of thought that goes into it. There's people, there's banks making presentations to you saying, hey, we can get you the collateral-backed type of balances that are required by law, and this is the basis points we can give you, but you need to do this and this compensated balance and all these things that bankers like to do. So, I started looking at this, and it's a year-end look, Patrick, mm-hmm. that starts making me think this, because that's what people are always analyzing the financial numbers, so and Bob has done a lot of work behind this, so I'd like to hear some of it and know some of it, know the rationale around the choices that we're making as a district. I know I'm a little in the weeds, but we are in the finance committee, so.
All right. With that, we will close